Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is our producer, Lee Cantor, and a passel full of people. We have got a studio full. Our show is going to be a little bit different this morning, a little bit different format. It's the roundtable format, and we've invited people representing several nonprofit agencies and organizations who serve those agencies. Todd Schnick is in the studio with me this morning, but we have so many people, we're sharing a mic, which essentially means you're not going to hear a lot from Todd this morning. I might let him chime in a little bit because a nonprofit that Todd serves, and he's on the board for this outfit, called the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta, has a fundraising event this weekend. So we will let Todd talk about that a little bit in just a little while. But first, to get things off the ground, I'm going to ask each of the folks that have joined us in the studio this morning to introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about their organization and any events that they are currently promoting or have coming up pretty soon. And then we'll dive in and have a little bit of a discussion about the general climate for nonprofits, particularly here in the Metro Atlanta area. First up, I'm going to start with the executive director for Cobb Symphony Orchestra, a gentleman by the name of Brian Hermanson. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you. I'm, as you said, with the Cobb Symphony Orchestra, and the Cobb Symphony is actually much more than just an orchestra. It brings together, it's a large umbrella organization, which brings together the Cobb Symphony, the Georgia Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, which is the largest youth orchestra program in the Southeast, brings together the CSO Chorus, brings together the CSO Jazz, and finally the Georgia Center for the Arts, which is a unique multi-tiered introductory way to get into the arts regardless of where you currently are. I mean, you could have no experience to tons of experience and still find a unique setting in the arts.
Well, we are delighted to have you on the show, and understand you're coming off of a fun event just this past weekend. Tell us a little bit about how that went.
Yeah, we just finished the Noteworthy 5K, which was a run walk, and we had well over 600 people come out and join us in what was beautiful weather, a great course, and just some great camaraderie.
Well, I didn't get a chance to make it. I was doing a little talk over at Georgia Tech on Saturday morning, but I love that you provided the option for those of us that couldn't make it, for those of us that couldn't make it, or maybe, you know, really wouldn't necessarily do all that great in a walk run anyway, to do the Phantom runner option. So I did get a T-shirt. Did you bring it with you this morning?
I'll get it back to you later.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Thanks for coming down, Brian. And sitting next to you is Joe Blumberg. So what's your story, Joe?
Well, I'm the executive director of the Men's Health and Wellness Center. Our mission is to give men more responsibility for their own health care. We do this through educational programs and sponsored events that in total provide a basis through which men can make more responsible decisions based upon conditions they are facing in their life as they age. And we hope to be able to shorten that longevity gap between men and women because, as near as we can tell, there's no medical reason for it. It's strictly the fact that men don't take as good care of themselves as they might. The old adage, which is, if I knew I'd live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself, no longer applies.
So what's your favorite part about that work, Joe? And what, if anything, do you find a little bit frustrating about trying to get that message out?
Well, the most frustrating element of getting the message out is just the fact that it's a message that goes to men and their partners. We know that probably the first person that's going to visit our website is the spouse, And we've designed the website, therefore, to be attractive, easy to use, and something that can be easily referenced and passed along to their partners. The whole idea that men are stoic, they go into the medical community and frequently talk to a stoic provider, and when they come out, the discussion is, how'd you do? How do you feel? And the answer is always, gee, I feel fine. Everything's great. My numbers look good and everything's terrific. And yet, if there's a spouse who might be sitting there, she's vehemently shaking her head left to right, or she comes out and she says, did you tell him about this? And he said, no, I didn't mention that. Or did you tell him about that? And he might say, no, I didn't mention that either. What'd you talk about? Well, we talked about how Georgia Tech did. We talked about the game of the dogs. We talked about sports teams here in Atlanta. Maybe talked about kids and where they were going on vacation, but rarely do they talk about the health issues. That by itself is a problem, because what we're doing is we're carrying a message to the community, and we're trying to raise money in a community where people have choices about how they want to spend those dollars. And frequently those choices go to women's and children's issues and not necessarily men's issues. So that's the challenge for us.
Well, at least it was until you came on the High Velocity Radio Show. Your fundraising challenges are over now, Joe.
Oh, that's great. I'll take notes. Copious notes, by the way.
There you go. Well, listen, we have six males in this studio. I wonder how many of us, honestly now, how many of us know our numbers? The numbers he's referring to. Well, and tell us what numbers are you referring to, Joe, real quick. What are you talking about?
Well, we're looking at cholesterol numbers. We're looking at the HDL, the LDL. We want to know what our blood sugar is, what our body mass index is, and those are just the basic numbers. But, you know, over and above that, as men get a little bit older, they want to know what their PSA numbers are, and they want to track those over time. We found now that it's not just a hard number that people should be looking at in terms of being above or below that number, but what we're looking for is the velocity, the change in the PSA number over time. And when there is a change in the velocity of that number going up, that's an indicator of a severe problem. And, you know, we'd like to say that this is something that's been around for a long time, but the theory behind it and what it indicates for men in their lives is relatively new compared to some of the other conditions that men are facing, like heart disease and so on.
Well, it's pretty telling. You know, you can't tell through radio, but I just want the audience to know, the listening audience to know, no one in this room raised their hand when I asked how many of us know our numbers, so that's very telling. We may have some immediate help for you, though, Joe, because also joining us this morning is Amanda Nicewonder, am I pronouncing that right, and Molly Ray, both of whom are with an organization called For Momentum, and I suspect may have some ideas about how to help organizations like Joe's attract money and attract corporate sponsorship. Tell us a little bit, and we'll start with you, Molly, if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit about For Momentum and how this organization works and the kind of things you're out there doing for folks.
Okay, great. Well, For Momentum is a niche agency. We specialize completely in the partnership arena, trying to assist nonprofit organizations more effectively reach out to corporate America for resources. We also support corporate partners with their outreach to the community to make their efforts more strategic. The days of being able to provide just sheer philanthropy are behind us in today's economy, and companies are really looking to support charities and nonprofits that are worthy, but there has to be a business return on investment. So we really work between those two communities to help them more effectively communicate and partner together.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm absolutely fascinated that you have found a way to build a business model that gives you, provides you with access to, in my mental image, is both sides of the table. That is absolutely fascinating to me, but I do suspect it puts you in a uniquely powerful position to be of tremendous service to both. Can you walk us through, you know, maybe the high points of a case study? How does something like that come together?
Okay, great. Well, we certainly try to bring value. I hope that we do. When we're helping a nonprofit organization, not to get too philosophical on you, but in the traditional fundraising model, nonprofits traditionally raise money in a number of ways: individual donations, capital campaigns, grants from both foundations as well as from other organizations, special events like the one that Brian spoke about earlier. Those are the traditional models of fundraising. There's a fifth type of fundraising that is called cause-related marketing, and that's really the area where we focus, and we try to help nonprofit organizations understand how to integrate cause marketing into their funding mix. Just like any type of fundraising, the most important thing is to understand your donor. And the corporate donor has particular needs that have to be met. Frequently, nonprofit professionals, because they're less familiar with this particular donor segment, aren't quite sure how to cultivate the right sort of support from that donor segment, and that's our job. So an example would be, I'll give an example of a small nonprofit that we did some work with called One Warm Coat. And their mission is to provide a gently used coat for anyone who needs it. I mean, it's a pretty clear mission. They had a total annual operating budget of $30,000. Yes.
Wow.
$30,000. They were providing a nationwide support to the way that they provided nationwide outreach is they were very savvy, and they had a tremendous website and resource where individuals could learn how to conduct a coat drive in their own local community. And they put resources, how to market it, how to staff it, how to donate the coats, how to have them distributed through local organizations like the Salvation Army, et cetera. But where they were really missing the boat is they needed more resources, obviously, with that whopping $30,000 a year budget.
Lee Cantor spends that on wine over a weekend. $30,000, that's incredible. I can't believe they get anything done with $30,000.
I knew I wanted to hang out with Lee more. when I heard that, I was rather amazed, too. That is, I have to say, on the more extremely small side. But there are really a lot of ways that this particular organization could partner with corporate America to expand their mission. So two things that we were able to do with them during our time of work with them. The first was that we helped them to reach out to logical partners. So, for example, coat companies make, a really logical partner for One Warm Coat. More specifically, there was an organization that you may have heard of called Gore-Tex that makes material for coats. And Gore-Tex was about to do, we had heard, reading in the press, that they were about to do a big mobile tour of actually a weather station where you would stand in a Gore-Tex coat and feel the rain and wind and see how warm it kept you. So we contacted them and said, look, we're not looking for money. What we're looking is to have you adopt the One Warm Coat as your charity as you go on these mobile tour, as you go throughout the country on your mobile tour and conduct a coat drive as a part of your initiative. And they loved it. So it was a great way where One Warm Coat got tremendous exposure. They got a rolling footprint with Gore-Tex, which is a high quality and really nice fit partner. The next year, we were able to expand it where Gore-Tex actually tied in with key retailers. So as they went from mall to mall doing their mobile tour, they would select one of the partners that carried Gore-Tex products, and they would conduct the coat drive at their location. So really brought in their key business-to-business partners on the deal.
Wow. I mean, that strikes me as incredibly creative. And I bet you guys sit around all the time and you think about when you get a new nonprofit that's interested and needs the help, and you have some corporate entities that need and want your support, it must be fun to just sit around and brainstorm, what could we do for a Cobb Symphony Orchestra or a Men's Health and Wellness Center, and, where can we help Coke or Home Depot or somebody like that channel money? Now, let me ask you this. You mentioned Gore-Tex. I happen to know. I did a little bit of research. I know you've done some work with Coke. Would smaller firms benefit from working with you as well?
Smaller corporations? Absolutely.
Yeah.
We actually have a wide variety of logos on our client mix, if you will. Some very large, like Intercontinental Hotels Group, where Amanda worked for years, and we'll share about that at the right time. We've also helped much smaller organizations. The key to success is this. The geographic footprint should drive the partner and prospect selection. And I think, every nonprofit in the whole world puts Coke in their top five wish list because they're just known to be such a great wealth of resources. But really, if you're a nonprofit organization, you should be setting your sights on a company that's interested in reaching a demographic within your footprint. So on the flip side of that, a local corporation should also be looking for a nonprofit partner that delivers in their footprint. So if I am – we're helping an organization here in town. It's called FootSmart Catalog. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's a foot care catalog, and it's great. And they have that's a particular case where they're not a huge nationally known brand, but they have a particular unique asset to bring to the nonprofit community, and we're focusing in on a strategy for them on walk, like the one Brian just did, mm-hmm. you know, because there's a natural correlation between foot care and walking. So you look for that natural correlation. I know that there's a nonprofit here in town called Century 21 Leadership, and they've worked with a tremendous amount of local business leaders teaching young Atlantan students how to develop leadership skills. So again, it doesn't always have to be, you know, a household brand with, right. you know, that you're buying in the grocery store every week. There's really, it can be adapted to suit your particular footprint and your mission point.
Now, Amanda, I suspect that for Momentum, the whole darn opera would fall apart if you weren't there. Well, but you come to that practice with some very specific expertise and experience working on the corporate side of trying to decide when and where and how to channel those dollars. Is that correct?
Right. I just joined For Momentum a couple of months ago, so I'm the newest member of the team. But I met Molly actually in 2003 when I was working for Intercontinental Hotels Group, and we asked her to come on board and help us figure out some ways to funnel money to different charity partners, and she helped us put together a lot of calls marketing campaigns for our 7 hotel brands that IHG is the parent company for.
So how do you go about deciding, let's say maybe you don't have the assistance of someone like a Molly or their firm that they've already sort of scoped out the territory. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there with your desk. You got X amount of dollars. You're trying to figure out how to channel it. What kind of criteria do you put into place? How do you go about deciding? Because there's all these wonderful, needy, worthy causes. You've got people that are hungry. You definitely want to support the arts because of the way that what gets done there gets folded back into the community. You've got, I mean, it must be very difficult to decide where to channel that money.
It's very difficult. You get so many requests every day, and you obviously yeah. can't say yes to all of them, but there's not one that you get that's not worthy. So it's very hard to, you know, look at a charity and hear their great mission and say, sorry, we can't help you. So you have to just first and foremost be strategic about where you're going to put your dollars and get your copy of your company's business plan and make sure that your strategic giving program matches up with your business objectives of your company. So it's very helpful to narrow your focus to maybe 2 or 3 different areas. Figure out if you're going to support education, if you're going to support the environment, if you're going to support children, whatever it may be. Put some guidelines in place, and that'll really help you vet the charity. So when you get, you know, 200 requests a week, you can say this one obviously falls into the category that we do support. This one falls into the categories that we don't support. And then within that, you'll be able to maximize your, you know, your reach and your impact and your charitable dollars.
Now, is it typical for an organization the size of IHG to put up some buffers that keep Joe and Brian from even talking to you guys?
I mean, we try to listen to everyone because you never really know when something's going to strike a chord that, you know, maybe it might be something you want to get involved in. But, you know, there were some obvious guidelines. We had at IHG, we had, you know, five criteria that we kind of looked at as far as giving areas: children, diversity, environment, education, health and well-being. That, you know, that's pretty broad, but it helped us, you know, figure out a little bit where we wanted to focus. And then we also, like Molly was saying, geographically, we had large employee populations in Atlanta, Charleston, and Salt Lake City. So if an organization didn't really have programs that benefited those communities, that was, you know, another thing that we looked at as far as being able to vet them out, because we really wanted to focus where our employees lived and worked.
Well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the Bryans and the Joes, I mean, they need to factor that in when they're laying out their map of who they're going to approach and how.
Right. The charity should definitely have done research prior to approaching their corporate partner and know what their focus areas are, where they work. Otherwise, it's just, you know, kind of a waste of their time to approach an organization. If you're a health organization and the organization only does work with, you know, children K-12, diabetes or something like that, then, you know, it's not going to match up. So.
Right. And all of these organizations, here's my perception and my knowledge of the nonprofit arena and the challenges associated with it. Nearly all of it has been gained in the last 4 weeks since I've sort of done a deep dive in this world and visited with several people in the nonprofit arena. But my perception so far is that these folks are really struggling. They're not getting the private donation dollars that they used to get. They're not getting the grant money that they used to get. They're really struggling. And maybe now's a good time to introduce my co-host and buddy, Todd Schnick. I mean, what about the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta? Is it easier this year, or is it a particularly tough year? What's going on with you guys in terms of raising money and providing services?
Well, it's been a very difficult year for the Furniture Bank. The economy has struck us hard, but as a result of that, you become innovative and you try some different things and you employ new strategies, and we've actually maintained. I'm inspired by a $30,000 a year budget. I've been whining about our $500,000 a year budget, and realizing the limitations that we have on that. I can't imagine. I admire that effort. But a significant majority of our money does come from grants, and so and we for years we've relied. Okay, this organization, they every year they give $50,000, they give $40,000. We almost build our budgets around these expected grants, and that hasn't been the case this year. And we've done some creative things by using some of the stimulus. There's some stimulus money out there that you have to use, but that's not a permanent long term solution. And so we have to be creative, and we anticipate when the economy improves that grants will go back to their normal levels, and we'll maintain that. But then one of the biggest focuses I have with the Furniture Bank is taking efforts to identify larger corporate partners. Our corporate giving is exceedingly low, and so that's one of the main things that I'm focusing on. And one of the goals of our event this coming weekend is to raise corporate dollars.
This coming weekend, so how much money would you like Radio X to give?
Lee's committed to $100,000, and we are so grateful. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you so much, Lee. A little round of applause for Lee Cantor, ladies and gentlemen. All right. But no joke, let's talk about the money a little bit. And you know, maybe we go back to Brian as an example. I've had a chance to get to know some of the folks at Cobb Symphony Orchestra because one of our business associates, one of the people that Todd Schnick and I are working with, is a guy by the name of Todd Youngblood. We're doing some project work with him, with some of his clients. And Todd Youngblood just happens to serve on the board of the Cobb Symphony Orchestra. So we've gotten a chance to visit. And again, I don't think I'm telling, tales out of school. I think the Cobb Symphony Orchestra's, you know, you guys have got some challenges with fundraising this year as well. Am I right?
Excuse me. Absolutely. Fundraising this year in particular has been lackluster, let's put it that way. One of the things you hinted upon earlier, though, was the fact that you have to be innovative. You have to be continually seeking new ways. You have to be continually looking at what you're doing and figuring out how it actually relates to the community. And the Cobb Symphony is really unique in that 87% of our money is funds are actually earned, which if you look at the national average for symphony orchestras, the national average is only about 42%. So we've made a clear and consistent investment in our community, and the community has returned. Unfortunately, obviously, everyone's income is down proportionately, and so therefore their giving is down proportionately. But it does present some clear and unique opportunities that we personally, I look at it as a chance. Yes, it's a challenge, but because it's a challenge, it's an opportunity. It's not we're in trouble. It's how do we get past this hurdle and make it even better.
Well, it certainly seems to me like you would have a good story to tell. That strikes me, and I don't know, we'll ask around some of the experts here at the table, that strikes me as a high number, but I know I'm personally attracted to the idea of giving, or I would even call it investing, in a cause that I see as sustainable and scalable. So if I feel like I put a dollar into Brian's machine and a dollar and a quarter comes out somehow, some way, whether it's these kids grow up to make more of a contribution to society. So how are you earning these? How are you earning these dollars? Is it from performances? People are paying to come to the performances.
Both performances and different initiatives we put in place. There's different ways to get involved, whether or not it's partaking directly in a program, through private lessons, through the youth orchestra. Interestingly, kids pay to be a member of the youth orchestra, but that only covers about 30% of their costs, 33% to be exact, and. So, yes, a lot of our money is just simply earned through different performances, through different activities, and then we go out and make the appeal to other people for the remaining percentage. There's a study actually done on return investment. I'm glad you used that word. Up in British Columbia, that every dollar invested in an arts organization usually generates between $1.25 and $1.35 directly back into the community. So it's truly an investment. It's not a Yes, it's charitable, but it's not the type of charity where you're just giving and it goes who knows where. It is an actual investment into the economic development of the community.
Wow, I really am smart. You see that? Isn't that cool? Well, but that's very encouraging to know. That makes me feel much better about writing a $100 check or a $1,000 check or, you know, Lee, somebody like him, writes a $100,000 check. You got to feel good about that, that you're getting that kind of return. And I would think, Molly, maybe you can answer to this. You know, Brian and his organization, maybe they have a little bit of a leg up in that they really do have ways that they can generate, they can do some entrepreneurial things to raise money. But are there some entrepreneurial things maybe that other concerns can do and they just haven't really thought about how to collaborate and partner and figure that out?
Yeah. I commend you for having that number, you know, in your pocket, if you will, because a lot of nonprofits haven't done their homework to really be able to illustrate the case to their donors. And I think that's a great one, even though it's through research. It shows that in general, this sort of help. So anytime that you can help the donor understand their investment or make, in my case, and I'm going to segue in my case to the corporate donor, which I mentioned earlier, is a different donor segment. I mean, the corporate donor is not a philanthropic donor. The corporate donor is doing this because they are looking for a business return on investment. I encourage my corporate clients to really be very creative and very pay a lot of attention to the importance of measurement, because what I find is that when corporations make a donation and don't track the return on investment, it's a 1 or 2 time investment. Mm-hmm. If we can show them the return on investment, they'll be a long-term partner, and that's what really both parties want. So what I encourage you to do as a nonprofit is really think about the corporate donor and their particular needs. Ask them. They do not expect you to be mind readers. I think many times nonprofits feel like, oh, well, I should know all this stuff, and I don't. You can't know what you haven't asked the actual partner. So ask them what their measures of success are. Some of the measures of success only they can track. And if they're looking for a bump in sales, you can't track that for them. But you've got to work with them to make sure they're putting in realistic measures for how they're going to pull the information at the end of the time period so that you can really see if you hit the mark or not. Things that you can do to help them measure effectiveness of their donation might be satisfaction testing. Maybe if you get a volunteer day or something like that going, maybe you do a beginning of the day and end of day satisfaction score, because it's shown time and time again that employees really want to work for companies that are good corporate citizens. A lot of times the measurements are internal, a lot of times they're external. But the point is that you do need to measure, and you need to set those objectives at the beginning of the program and then track and report on them.
Well, having woken up 3 times in the middle of the night last night to visit the restroom, I have a particular affinity for Joe Blumberg's nonprofit. Let's help him out a little bit. How would you, and would you work with something like the Men's Health and Wellness Center? And if so, do they pay you, or how does the money work? And walk us through an engagement like that. Let's help Joe for 5 minutes if we can.
Okay. Well, we are a marketing agency, and so we operate very much in that fashion. So what we would do is sit down with an organization like yours and scope out your goals and objectives. What are you trying to accomplish? We would do what we call a organizational audit. We would find out what you've currently got in terms of your marketing asset bank, obviously I know you have a robust website, you have a magazine, you have a number of different assets, and we would look again through our corporate donors' eyes, what sorts of things can you bring to the table that would attract a corporate partner? We would understand more through our audit about what your organizational goals are. Are you trying to expand membership? Are you trying to raise money? I know you are, and so on and so forth. We would also benchmark your competitors. So that's a very important part that nonprofit organizations often have a philanthropic hat on. They don't think about the business model. You've got to benchmark your organization and find out who is providing, who is competing with you to provide similar information, who is also going after funding dollars. It could be that you need to benchmark Brian because you're both calling on people in the Atlanta marketplace, even though you have very different missions. So you really have to take a good business look at that. So we would help you benchmark that. We would help you develop your strategies for how you want to go after corporate support. And then once we get to that stage, we'd begin to develop a prospect list for you. So, for example, we may say that You know, your strategy is to reach men at a younger stage to get them into the doctor more frequently because they can then make a lifelong habit. I'm totally tap dancing here. I'm guessing that might be, you know, one of your goals. So if that is one of your messaging goals, then where can we reach out and find those sorts of men? And off the top of my head, I can say, you know, we might go to athletic clubs. But those guys are pretty healthy already. Maybe we need to go to the taverns and find the guys who, and find a beer partner who
want. And here again, Lee can help us. See, this is working.
That's good. So, you know, we want to find a partner who is reaching the target audience that you want to reach, and then figure out ways to partner. Does that help?
It does. It helps. It helps a lot. And this may be an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you make money on both ends of this thing?
No, I make money on one side, and I didn't answer that part of your question earlier. So the payment structure, when we are doing all this work on behalf of an organization like Joe's, yes, they pay us. And that we do not take a percentage, so it's not we're not looking for a commission-type structure. And, in fact, we are a member of the Association of Fundraising Professionals, and so we abide by their guidelines, which is to not take a commission.
Wow, that's actually part of their ethics or whatever.
It is very much a part of the fundraising and development community ethical picture. We provide a scope of work and tell you how many hours and tell you a rate for that work, and we make sure that we meet deliverables. So that's how we are hired when we're working on behalf of a nonprofit. So when we're working on behalf of a corporation, it's the same thing. We go in, we help them set strategy, we help them identify what are going to be the most logical partners, negotiate those partnerships, implement the deal. They pay us an hourly rate. There is no commission, and I do not take money on both sides. I take money from both sides,
right,
but not at the same time.
Well, you know, it occurs to me that when an organization is struggling, particularly maybe in a climate like this year, you know, everything you're describing sounds great. It sounds wonderful. And, you know, I've got a $30,000 shortfall, and so that's all I can see. You know, it's just all that's in front of me. So what suggestion, if any, do you have for the firm, for the organization that is really struggling? What would you have them do first, just to try to get out from under the challenge and get out of that hole?
The nonprofit organization?
Yeah.
Okay. Because a lot of my corporate clients also have a deficit budget they're working against, so we can talk about that
okay.
too.
Okay.
But from the nonprofit side, I would say the fastest way to leverage this is to look at relationships you already have. You know, sometimes the longest part of the sales cycle, if you will be getting that appointment with the right prospect. So look at your current donors, look at your current volunteers, your board, you know, your friendly network, that sort of thing, as to who may have an affinity for your mission. That's really going to be the fastest way. But what you need to do is, I really like the word innovation that was used earlier. Maybe you need to go after some of your current partners with a different ask. So, you know, obviously they have proven that they care about you to some level already. So maybe if you can go in and find a different way for them to help you, you'll get incremental dollars, and that's going to be the fastest way to get there. I think that nonprofits and really all people in general have a tendency to, in fact, there was some fodder going back and forth before the show started about, well, gosh, we've practically written our budget knowing that we're going to get XYZ from these five companies, mm-hmm. and they didn't come through with it this year.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't write your budget that way because that was last year, and you got to be writing your budget for this year and next year. And what's going on in today's marketplace that needs to factor into your budget setting? So you've got to be constantly innovating and improving and finding new ways to work with your partners, not just going back with your traditional ask. You've got to be innovative in these times.
Well, and I want to ask Amanda, in fact, I want to ask everybody at the table about this. You know, Schnick and I, out in the corporate environment, we consult small consulting firms. And we are known for, and I'm particularly known for, and have been quoted both in speeches and in some writings, for suggesting that if you will serve your competitors, you won't have any. And because what we find is in small consulting firms, so often they're scratching and clawing and kicking just to get that next little piece of business. And I come from some very high-performing small consulting firms. That's not how they operate at all. They're very giving. They're very collaborative. What has been your experience, if any, and what advice do you have to offer, if any, in the context of these nonprofits helping each other, partnering up to collaborate? I mean, is there something that the Men's Health and Wellness Center and the Cobb Symphony Orchestra and the Furniture Bank could all get together and do something just anybody on that. What experience do you have? What advice do you have on that?
You want me to go? I feel like I'm talking too much, but I've got a couple ideas, and then I'll pass it over to Joe. But, you know, collaboration is king right now. It really is. And I think that corporations are really looking to nonprofits to be more businesslike and more professional, and collaboration is a great way to do that. In fact, one of our clients is a large pharmaceutical firm, and what we do with them is we bring in 50 of their nonprofit partners for a networking session every year to find out ways they can collaborate with one another. I mean, the whole purpose of this meeting is to foster collaboration between all the small nonprofits. So I think that you will pay great dividends. You know, I think that for these guys here in the room, Furniture Bank and Men's Health, there's obviously a common point of intersection. You're both in Atlanta. You both have a male audience. It's a natural way that you can maybe share resources. I think the traditional nonprofit philosophy is, I'll never share my donor base because then they'll start giving to the other organization. And I think what we have to realize is that this is not necessarily a zero-sum game. You know, the other thing that you can do is come up with ways that don't feel as much like a straight out donation, but bring value. So maybe if you donate to Men's Health, you get a coupon book from the Cobb Symphony Orchestra for 15% discount on 3 shows. So you both win. You get more viewers, you get donations, and everybody wins.
I like it. Well, and it occurred to me when we were talking about the Men's Health and Wellness Center thing. You know, of course, I see the commercials like everybody else does with Flomax. And, I mean, I would think a pharmaceutical like that would want to at least get to know a Joe and his crowd. And I got to tell you, when I walk into Starbucks, and I mean, I'm just talking off the top of my head. I'm sure this is probably worth what you're paying for it. But if I walk into a Starbucks in the area and I see a Cobb Symphony Orchestra, particularly if it's youth, a CD where these kids are playing orchestra music, I'll pay $20 for that CD if I think 10 of it is going to support these. I mean, and I think a lot of people think that way. So I do suspect that if they can see the forest for the trees and get away from the initial challenges, that there probably are a lot of opportunities to do some entrepreneurial things, to do some collaboration. And I mean, they're already doing some pretty cool stuff. Say more about your upcoming event, Schnick, that's coming up with Furniture Bank.
Well, before I do that, a quick point to Molly about donors. The biggest challenge in recruiting new donors is recruiting new donors, people who are not in the habit of doing that. And the easiest way, and I tell this to all my political candidates who I coach to raise money, the easiest donation to get is from someone who's already given to you. That they have a vested reason to want to see you succeed and grow. And so one of the things that we're doing at Furniture Bank to be innovative is to reach out and partner with other nonprofits and share those donor bases, because if you can share people who are in the habit of giving, then you can grow that. And the fear is always, well, gee, you know, I don't want to share because they may lose interest in my organization and go to them. Well, then that's your own problem. You have to be sure that you're still conveying value and making that donor feel important about contributing. But to answer Stone's question about Saturday, is our big annual gala. It's our principal fundraiser. It's non-grant, non-government. It's called Cherish the Future. And what we do, you didn't give me a chance to actually talk about what the Furniture Bank does, but we collect donated furniture, and we give that to families and individuals who have escaped homelessness, typically ladies who have fled and escaped domestic violence and who have started a new life and have spent every last dollar getting a roof over their heads but have no furniture, no kitchen table to have dinner with the children, or beds, mattresses for the kids. And so that's what we do, is we collect donated furniture and donate that to those families who have started a new life. But our event shares the future. So we, as you would expect an organization that collects furniture, we get some pretty interesting stuff donated to us. A lot of it needs a lot of work, and that's one of the main principal uses of our volunteer base is to refurbish and fix that furniture. But we collect a nice little pile of stuff that no one ever seems to want. And so in advance of our event, artists come in and select a piece of furniture, and they actually decorate it and paint it and do some really neat, I'm not saying that, Stone and I would spray paint it with, you know, two cans of stuff. These are very clever and many instances renowned artists who come in and do some really creative stuff with these pieces of furniture. And then we auction it off, and that's how we raise the money through this event. So that event is this Saturday, Saturday evening, Stone Ivy. Lee's donated $100,000, so it's going to be a great night.
And actually, we actually have at least one, if not two, high velocity tables. Is that right? And we've got to see Todd Schnick. If you're on Twitter, at Todd Schnick, or I don't even know what your email address is. What's your email address, Todd? Todd at highvelocityblog.com for these discounted tickets. Extra bonus, you will see Stone in a tux if you come to this gala. I wore it last year, and I'll wear it this year as well. We're running a little bit short on time, but here's what I'd like to do next. I'd like to go around the horn. I'd like you to share again the core mission of your organization, what you're doing, and I'd like you to share what it is that you need. What are you looking for? What kind of partnerships are you looking for? What kind of donors are you looking for? Are you looking for board members? And that's something we haven't talked about. And so you also might give us your take on what it takes to be an effective, productive board member. But share with us, if you will, a little bit the core mission of your organization, and tell our listening audience what do you need. We'll see if we can't get it for you. And let's start with Brian. Let's start with you, Brian.
Well, I'm Brian with the Trop Symphony, and one thing, I know I had described our organization before, but our core mission really is to create arts patrons, people that go out in the community and support the arts at large. And one thing, I will just take 2 seconds and say, one thing we did that was really innovative with the youth orchestra was we said, we're not here to create music students. We're not here to create kids that go on to conservatory. We're here to create great lovers of great art. And so hopefully they'll be supporting the community at large, you know, for years to come, and they'll understand that and become patrons. Like you said before, the biggest thing is finding new patrons, and that has to be part of your upbringing, is patronage. But what we need are just, obviously, more board members, more donations, and more continued and persistent community investment in the organization.
And so you really are, you're actively putting together some criteria for, maybe you already have, and you are looking for some board members for the Cobb Symphony. Is that right?
We're always looking for new people to get engaged, particularly on the board level, as donors and audience members.
Okay. All right. Terrific. Joe Blumper.
Stone, I can say that getting up 2 or 3 times a night might have nothing to do with your health. It's only... has to do with the quantity that is drunk each day. I mean, that's just one of the things that happens. We have a lot of needs, as most small nonprofits do. But we have been very aggressive in, first of all, having a gala in the fall of each year. This year it'll be on October the 2nd. Interestingly enough, it's called Momentum, where we emphasize the men in the middle of the word. And we actually give out awards, an award to people who have been very prominent in support of men's health issues. 2 years ago, it was Sanjay Gupta. Last year, it was Herman Cain. It's been a very successful event for us in that it is supported by the medical community as well as by some individual patrons. In the spring of the year, Men's Health Week is the week before Father's Day, and we are going to bookend that week by starting the week with our expo, which is a very large men's health fair. It's probably the largest men's health fair in the area. We bring together, this year we should have somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 to 400 men that will be coming to us for some free screenings. Some screenings they will pay for, but they're the more advanced screenings. So literally for the cost of maybe $50, they can walk away with a physical exam, and it'll be reviewed by nurses and so on, so that what we're trying to do is to get them to make healthier decisions based upon the results of their screenings. And they will be exposed to a lot of educational material, because we will have somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 exhibitors there. So anybody who wants to reach this community, we encourage them to come and be an exhibitor with us and provide us with educational information, since we should be promoting it with some streaming video to the people who are participating in the event. We will also have some live presentations from our Eating to Live program. Now, at the end of the week, we are going to have a walk run. It's going to be a run for Dad, and this is to promote prostate cancer awareness and research. The women's programs seem to have that right now in very full force, and we would like to get on that bandwagon a bit and encourage more organizations to be a part of what we're doing. We are very active in terms of trying to develop partnerships with other nonprofits. I'm probably on the phone with other executive directors at least once a week to find out what they're experiencing and what they're doing in order to improve their funding sources. It's extremely important for us to not only reach out to them for their ideas, but when they're willing to give us access to some of their resources, that becomes very helpful to our program. We are engaging the community, corporate sponsors where we can, especially as was clearly pointed out by Molly, that you know, when there is an organization that can match their interests to the kinds of things that we're doing, it's certainly easier to open the doors. And we do have significant interest from the pharmaceutical companies and other organizations that feel that we are we're a good resource for them. One of the ones that we talked to just the other day is a company that does advanced directives for people, which means that they'll take the critical information people need at end of life, their living wills and so forth, and they put them online so that, you know, when somebody is in need or a physician is in need of seeing that kind of a document, they don't have to wait for somebody to go to a safe deposit box, pull it out and bring it in. Hospitals and doctors are very encouraged by this kind of an opportunity, and they want to partner with us and provide us with some incentive to have more people sign up, because then we can get money based upon what is done there. The board member issue is something that we deal with all the time as well. We are actively in the market looking for some board members with significant skills that can help us out. One of those areas right now is the area of PR, and we're also looking for a corporate attorney. So those are some of the significant needs that we have, and it also gives you a little bit better idea of what we're doing to help promote ourselves within the community.
Thank you, Joe. Amanda, Molly, a little bit more about your organization, and tell us if anything we can be doing for you guys.
Go first. Well, thank you for giving us this great opportunity to talk about the business segment. Our desires aren't nearly as noble as these guys. We're looking for organizations, both corporations and nonprofits, that are interested in pursuing the partnership arena. And we like to serve that market. So we can do that in a number of ways. We do a lot of training on this topic to help organizations learn more about it. We obviously, as you've heard, have turnkey services that we can provide to provide that sort of custom support.
I just wanted to add something else about being innovative. And when you go to your corporate partners, instead of just necessarily asking for cash, think about the non-cash assets that the company can provide. Like, if it's IHG, they can do gift certificates for silent auctions. They can do discount hotel rooms for staff travel. We can provide employee volunteers, board members, whatever, other things that you may need besides cash. And we actually did a cool project with the National Furniture Bank a couple years ago, where our Candlewood Suites brand, which is about 150 hotels nationally, were changing out their bedding and mattresses. So, we didn't want to just throw those in landfills, which is what usually happens. The hotels have to.
That's how we get a lot of our mattresses, is from hotels, renovating. Yeah.
Yeah, and normally the hotels pay people to come and haul those off and put them in a landfill, and they have to pay disposal costs, and it hurts the environment. So we did a whole nationwide program, and we ended up saving the hotels $100,000 in disposal costs. We provided 4,500 families with new mattresses and bedding, and we saved hundreds of tons of materials from the landfill. So that was a cool project that didn't really cost us any cash. It was something that was already happening, and we were just able to tap into that. So.
Yeah, what a great and very important point to think about mm-hmm. those non-cash assets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Schnick, what, if anything, can we do for your cause, buddy?
Well, the like any organization, we're looking for more donor opportunities and a lot of organizations around that collect donated furniture. And so our biggest challenge is building awareness of what we do and how we do it. But looking for new corporate partners, as I mentioned earlier, our biggest challenge and our biggest opportunity is to recruit more corporate giving. And organizations Amanda just said about that donate furniture. We're always looking for that. Decorators, interior designers are some of our biggest allies because they'll go into a home opportunity and renovate a home and then they'll call me and say, hey, I'm fixing Sally Joe's house and she's got stuff. You can come. We'll come pick it up. So looking for those kind of opportunities. And board members, too. We're looking for new talent. That's a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. Is for all these nonprofits to bring on people who have skills or investments in their own community, and that's a great opportunity. I think a lot of nonprofits don't fully recognize that they can achieve some big things by getting some intriguing people with different connections in their organization.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having all of you on the show this morning, and I hope you'll come back because I'd like to further this conversation. I sense there's so much to be gained just by hanging out together. And throwing around some ideas. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing about For Momentum and learning more about men's health and wellness and the Cobb Symphony Orchestra. Certainly looking forward to this weekend's event for Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta. Well, until next time, this is the Men's Health and Wellness Center, Cobb Symphony Orchestra, For Momentum Cause Marketing, and our friends over at Furniture Bank Metro Atlanta, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.